First, I want to welcome the new retreatants who have recently arrived. It's a joy to welcome you here to the ashram. It's a refuge for lost souls, and those who keep getting lost will soon be found. Because everything that happens in the phenomenal plane is a symbolic pointing to that which is inconceivable to the level of consciousness of the character who is in the play. But simply by shifting one's locus of consciousness from the split-minded ego that is lost in the level of trial and tribulation and trauma that the egoic world presents as our Zen koan from the moment of birth, if not before, to that level in which the beauty of the dramatic imagination of God recognizes the actual function of the character within the psychic economy of the unfoldment of that masterwork of drama that enables the return to the level of the playwright and the absolute intelligence that underlies and determines the flow of that karmic unfoldment, that brings about not only a liberation from the suffering of the ego character, but a joy of grokking the importance of all of the suffering and the dishevelment and the discombobulation of the ego mind as it wonders, why me, and why did that have to happen, and, you know, how could God have allowed that, and all the other questions that the ego carries and can never answer for itself. And all of it becomes justified, and it morphs into great wisdom and great love and great bliss. Mahasukha. So because the recent retreatants are here for only a short time, I want to provide you with a shortcut to achieving liberation that I haven't told anyone else. So you get to hear a new teaching. Everyone else will be very upset. Okay, let's see if I can read the notes I just made about this. Okay, there's only three steps, not seven. We're shortening it, so there won't be any difficulty for anyone here. Okay, so step one, cultivate resonance. Resonance is the key concept here. Because we are always in resonance with something. But in this case, you must be in resonance with the Supreme Real. Now, that may seem abstract to you if you have been loitering in ego consciousness for too long. You won't have much, perhaps, of a memory or of a sense of that. But it's always there. It's always behind the veil of the ego thinking apparatus. The problem is, and if you're new to Sat Yoga, you may not understand our map. There are three reals. Because what is real to the ego is not real to the soul. But what is real to the soul is not real to the absolute God self, right? So there are three different levels of what is real depending on where your consciousness is centered. If you're centered in the ego mind, because it stays in resonance with its own past, with the residues that have become frozen in time, sanskaras, that are basically memory traces of trauma, then you are resonant with trauma. And all that will do is keep the repetition of traumatic feelings, and then the defense that the ego creates to the unbearable feelings of trauma include denial and censorship and repression and somatization, so that your body carries the suffering instead of your mind or your heart. And other defenses that space you out, or that don't allow you to be able to fully function, to cripple your intelligence or your capacity for feeling, and put you basically into a state that is delusional and possibly obsessed with ways of getting temporary enjoyments that become addictions to jouissance, as we say, and temporary enjoyments that actually increase suffering over time. So we don't want to be in resonance with that or with the imaginary defenses against the trauma. And at the ego level, there isn't access to an authentic symbolic understanding of the meaning of what has happened to one. You may think you understand, but it's an imaginarized version of the symbolic capacity because it's based in the delusional thinking of the ego. And so you can't just pull yourself up from your bootstraps or booty straps within the ego. You have to have shifted the locus of consciousness. And if you can muster up a love for God, a sense of devotion and of adoration of God, if you can feel that, if you can't feel the Supreme Real as the self, then that will take you out of the ego and give you a sense of faith that there is higher meaning and higher reality than what your ego mind and life have presented to you. And that focus will then bring you into resonance, if your heart opens, to the possibility of reuniting your consciousness with that ultimate blissful intelligence that has created and sustains this phenomenal dream that we call the world, that is now a nightmare for most, then you will be able to, in that resonance, hold the same vibrational frequency. And from that, new meanings and understandings of reality will precipitate into your consciousness and change the paradigm from which you are your life is being determined. So Mahabhava, which is that devotion, adoration, love of God, leads you to truth, satyam. So let's write a little more here. Once you can hold the resonance with the God Self, the Supreme Real, then your job is to integrate the truth, the new meanings of life that have been given by that resonance into the flow of your becoming, the unfoldment of your life on a practical level, an everyday level, constantly. To be able to live in that state of meaning moreness, in which you can see the depth and beauty of the unfoldment of reality rather than focusing on the pain and the torment that you have gone through and that otherwise will tend to repeat if you hold on to the old meanings and proclivities of and beliefs of consciousness. So that satyam will lead to sat, and sat to chit, chit meaning the ultimate intelligence that's the source of the new meaning. And at the same time, meaning has two levels to it. There is conceptual meaning, and there is aesthetic meaning. So you will not only see the purpose and the value and the extraordinary elegance of the complexity that goes into the phenomenal plane unfoldment, but you will appreciate the beauty. And you will resonate with beauty as being part of your own essence. Because the ego doesn't think it's beautiful. And if it felt beautiful, those things couldn't have happened. So it assumes that it deserves whatever it got, and therefore holds on to a sense of low self-esteem, even though that may be compensated by a superiority complex as a defense. So once you are able to then change the trajectory of your becoming by integrating this vibrational frequency and the understandings and compassion that it gives you for all of those beings who are suffering or still in the veil of the delusion of the ego, you are able to then become a channel for the energy of that beauty, that light, that love, that conscious intelligence to flow into the world. And then that changes your karma, and it brings about magical results at the level of synchronicities. Without your having to do anything, different kinds of events occur that you couldn't have predicted that will have very different effects upon you and upon your whole world. And then in the final stage, your becoming is reabsorbed into your being, which is the Supreme Real. And there is now a non-duality of your unfoldment of the vehicle of your life, the body, and its new upgraded operating system, which will then become unified with that Supreme Real and its intelligence. And you shift even from the level of Satchitananda to the ultimate level, which is referred to by the Shaivite wisdom schools as Anuttara. But we also refer to it as the inconceivable, the absolute self, Parama, Parameshvara or Paramashiva, that level of consciousness that is beyond the capacity of the thinking mind to translate into symbols, but is a knowledge of such a level that all that had been perceived, especially if it was perceived as a world, completely disappears, because everything, even at the soul level, and even at the level of the opening of soul to the God self, is still illusion. And the absolute real is something that defies the ability to put into language. But in that state, we can say it is clear that there is no world. There never was a world. Even at the previous level, the world is merely God's imagination. We have never left the mind of God. But beyond that, beyond even the mind of God, is the absolute. And that is the ultimate liberation and return to the source of that level of being from which we have fallen into this experience in order to rise again. So it's very simple, and it doesn't take anything but resonance, a willingness to resonate with that purity of heart that lies within, that is opened by the deep yearning for the real. The teachings of Sat Yoga include the understanding that's slightly different from Advaita Vedanta. Some of you have probably read Shankara and Ramana and others who are more in the Advaita Vedanta mode of, let's say, sublime ideology, which is that the Absolute, which they call Brahman, somehow gets encrusted with some, you know, fungus on its surface that they refer to as Maya, but without any understanding of how could Maya have grown on top of this, you know, pure Absolute Self. And so there's a level of inconsistency, like it doesn't make sense how perfect consciousness could have created something imperfect, right? Which at the level of duality becomes those questions of theodicy, how could God allow evil in the world, suffering, all that. But when you understand that God is a playwright and that this play is extremely meaningful, and every play requires villains, and it requires challenges, and it requires the dark force to be overcome by the light, you wouldn't go to a movie that didn't have those kinds. They'd be very boring, you know. Who would want to see any movie that didn't have great villains and suspense of whether the hero was going to get out of the handcuffs, you know, and be able to overcome the all-powerful enemy, right? So it has to be an impossible situation at the end, or it just wouldn't be fun. It wouldn't be worth it, you see? So it's part of the joy of that ultimate victory, that you have to have worthy villains to challenge. And, of course, the ultimate villain that you're fighting is your own mind. And that creates the problem because it impersonates you. And then you can't tell who you are from the villain who hates you and makes you feel guilty and shameful for being alive at all. So the game, in order to win it, requires discernment between the unreal and the real. If there isn't accurate discernment, then you're lost. So that's why this is a wisdom school that teaches the approach we call jnana yoga. You have to increase your intelligence, your ability to think. Before you can go beyond thinking, you have to think clearly and really understand the nature of the situation from a much higher perspective than the ego can give you. And then it's easy to win the battle, because at that level, then it's not a battle, you see. From within real one, it's life is a trauma and senseless and pointless, random, meaningless facade of animalistic tendencies of beings who are filled with aggression and lust desire for domination, etc., etc., right? That's the way the game is played at the end of Kali Yuga. But it wasn't always played that way. And if you go back to earlier moments, even in Kali Yuga, but earlier periods, and you check out what knowledge remains valid from those periods, which includes earlier drama. You can go back to Greek drama, and you can go back to the the literature and the artwork of ancient India and China and all of the ancient cultures. The further back, the more beautiful the drama was. It was a drama of heroic spiritual quest. And then it was a drama of heroism, much more on a phenomenal plane of protecting and sustaining the world against corruption. And then there was high romantic drama, courtly love, and the hero's quest. And you had then the age of tragedy and the age of that finally moved into, let's say, social realism. And then we in the postmodern, if you look at postmodern drama, because I think, you know, given the fact that this is a theodrama, the dramatists of the 19th, 20th, and 21st centuries, you know, have moved from the long ago Shakespearean kind of drama into the Chekhovian, and then you get later than that Pinter and Beckett, and it's become like a surrealistic black comedy, right, and a farce, and a nihilistic kind of approach to life that is offered even in the art, let alone in the media and in the cynical mainstream vehicles of low culture. So from within that construct, one cannot find hope or reason for faith. But if you will step back from the current final mode of darkness that has descended upon the world, you know that the darkest hour is always before the dawn, and that the new dawn is approaching. And if you get high enough on the mountain, you will see the sunrise before anyone else. And you will transmit that light into the world because the sun that is rising is in fact yourself, your God self. That is, even at this moment within the darkness of the nightmare of history is moving into the light. And that can be perceived with those whose third eye is open, for whom there is perfection in all of this. And even though the character that you have been playing may be ridiculous, you can laugh at it because you know you're not that character. And so there's a freedom from the suffering of the character. And once you can not take yourself seriously as if you are that character and it's all too real to laugh about, once you can let go of that, you can really enjoy then the transformation of the character and the turning of all of its suffering into wisdom and joy and love and capacity to heal others of their pain. So that's basically all that we're doing here. We are shifting from being patients in the madhouse to becoming at least interns and then hopefully doctors, and then maybe we retire from the madhouse altogether. But since the madhouse exists in your own consciousness, you must first stop externalizing it and then drop it from the internal belief system, and then you're done. So it's really very simple. And the resonance with the Supreme Real, because that's the first step, is already there, because you are the Supreme Real. It's not some other somewhere else. It's within you. But you can't access it fully until the interference patterns created by the ego's thinking and its emotions and its anxiety is sufficiently put on pause, at least, to allow the power of pure presence to shine through. And so that's what you want to do, is to stay in those moments in which the mind stops and then resonate with and hold the note of that presence that is peaceful and serene and silent, and then bring it fully into embodiment. And let everything else that isn't that drop away, and know that it's obsolete and unreal, and you don't have to hold on to any identity that includes any negative self-image or concept or past suffering that you've never been able to get beyond, right? And it falls away because it was just a program. It was never anything but an algorithm of belief that was never true. So I think that's probably enough information to get Jivan Mukti. So I don't know if there's anything else we need to talk about. But I know Nirgun's going to ask me a question. So before we go any further and run out of time, why don't you go to the mic and ask it, Nirgun? And I hope you remember the title, because I don't.
I'll ask it from here, actually.
Ah.
Thank you, Shinya. So the title of, we have an online weekend intensive coming up, and the title is The Recipe for Rapture, Why the World Must Now Be Sacrificed. I wonder if you could give us a little taste of that recipe.
Are the images online yet?
The images are, they haven't yet been published online, but they will be by the time anybody sees this.
Okay, good. If you're interested in this retreat, I recommend that you look at the images and read the actual retreat text. But the truth is, I have to confess, I never know before a retreat what I'm actually going to say. All right? So I can make it up, but it probably won't actually be what will unfold in the retreat. I often don't even know after the retreat what I said, you know, let alone before. So all I can say now is that the reason for giving the retreat that title, which has two key concepts, one being rapture and the other being sacrifice, is because I have been dipping again into the ancient texts, including the Vedas. And these are texts that are really thousands of years old, and before they were written, they were orally transmitted. They have a tremendous amount of information that has not percolated up into later versions of spiritual understanding. They contain a lot more information, for example, than Hermeticism or alchemy or any of the other esoteric traditions, with a few exceptions in which some of that information has been restored by a few very powerful sages who were given the task of renewing that understanding, but very few and far between. And the key to the ancient understanding, and remember, in the ancient world, all the cultures understood that time is circular rather than linear. It is infinite because a circle never ends, and there's ultimately no first point, no last point, but there is an omega point, as Teilhard de Chardin made famous, but that is also the alpha point of the next age, the next world cycle. And although it stops for a moment for the return of the space-time continuum into the eternal pleroma of the absolute light that we call the singularity, because it's in eternity and not in time, there doesn't seem, from the plane of Chronos, which is linear time that you feel unfolds in successions of moments, there isn't any time out, because there's no memory of it, and so the wheel continues to turn. We are at that moment when the ancient wisdom both prophesied that it would happen, and in the Vedas wrote about the last time it happened, because the sages who conveyed that information were still in the consciousness that was aware of that moment, and could bring the nuances of significance of the key to passing through the eye of the needle, to use another metaphor, from Kali Yuga and the limited finite consciousness of ego into the liberated state of the Godhead, and then to have the choice to pass into the next cycle, but the next cycle being a new Satyuga in which all the beings are in their full avataric mode of consciousness, in total resonance with God consciousness, and with all the powers and levels of command over matter, if you will, because there is no matter really, but of the forms that appear and disappear in the phenomenal plane, to manifest at will. Okay, so those. Being able to pass through with continuity of consciousness is the key. And the key to doing that is contained in the accomplishment of the great sacrifice. So that great sacrifice is of two levels. One is the sacrifice of God, of his own body, the body of God, which in the Vedas is referred to as Mahapurusha, is itself sacrificed, but it has to be met by and resonated with by a sacrifice made by the human yogi who wishes to achieve union with that absolute self. And so which in a way Kali Yuga can be thought of as having two bookends, the Vedas on one end and the crucifixion of Christ on the other. Because that sacrifice, which is God's sacrifice as well, that sacrifice is for redemption. The first is for creation. But creation and redemption, although they seem to take place at two ends of time, actually, of course, happen at the same moment. And so it's the bringing together of these two levels of sacrifice. one of which seems more about death and loss and destruction as the crucifixion, the passion of Christ, as it's called. But really, it is in order to become risen back into the light and the bliss and the full empowerment of the God self from that condition of kenosis, or having been emptied out of the fullness of the Godhead, to be finally again returned to that absolute nature from which we have strayed or which we have forgotten and gone through this this long journey into the dark night of the soul and back to the light. So the sacrifice brings the rapture. And what is rapture? It is the state of ecstasy. It's not to be understood as fundamentalist Christians do, that you will be bodily lifted into the sky. It's not that. And it's not that your ghostly presence will come out of the grave if you've already died and rise. No, but there will be an ecstatic release of all identification with the material vehicle and even the soul vehicle, and the return to the absolute supreme light. And the ecstatic bliss of that liberation from the finite into the infinite is what is celebrated. So we have the yajna, the sacrificial act, and all of Hinduism is based on the repetition of that original sacrificial act. The word yajna is a sacrificial fire, right? But that sacrificial fire is a microcosmic representation of the final holocaust, of the end of the world, that is also a sacrifice that brings about a new beginning. So we have the yajna on one end and the Eucharist on the other. Now, all of the religions have their own forms of sacrifice. In Islam, of course, jihad, martyrdom, the sacrifice for the vision of the Mohammedan reality is there, and there is sacrifice involved in every religious tradition. Even just obeying the dharma of any religious institution or creed or approach to morality and ethics, it requires a sacrifice. But what we're talking about is a much higher ultimate level of sacrifice. And when you are in resonance and have accomplished that, then the rapture includes that return to the intelligence and the creative capacity to manifest a new world of complete divine beauty. So this is that moment in which the horror becomes the beauty and the darkness turns to light, and all is transformed as a result of the work of those who have the courage to undergo the sacrificial act and complete it. And that's really what Sat Yoga is about. So I think that hopefully answers the question and the reason for the retreat's theme and the recipe that will be offered, and hopefully we will actually perform the sacrifice during the retreat for those who are ready for that sacred event. Okay, so now we'll open the floor to other questions. If anyone has any question about anything that was spoken of this evening, especially. And if you are a new retreatant, do not be shy. Go to the mic and proudly ask your question. Nothing is too elementary. And if you do have any lingering doubts or concerns or questions about the meaning of anything, please ask. And of course, that's also true for the ashram nivasis.
Hello.
Namaste.
Namaste. Nice to meet you in person. So what came up for me was around discernment.
Mm.
And I've always felt that that was the key, whether I knew it or not, mm-hmm. was being able to decipher between what's going on in my mind and you know, reality, whatever we want to call it. And so when you said that, that is, you know, in essence, the main practice is discernment.
Mm-hmm.
I find that most of the time it's pretty easy to catch the character in action.
Okay, good.
And the more the time has gone on, I feel though that it's gotten a little bit more difficult in a sense, because things come up in my mind that feel pretty real. And so I guess my question is like, anything that I'm sitting with that comes up in my mind, is that the character? Or is there, like, how do you discern the character speaking from God consciousness?
Well, when you're saying something feels very real, I assume you're referring to some event within the phenomenal plane. Something happened, right, that you're... your consciousness determined is not good for you, right? Or is evil, or is in some way going to bring about a very negative consequence. Is that right?
You know, funny enough, the stuff that happens externally seems much easier to go, that's uh-huh. not real.
Okay.
It's more that there's almost like a lack of trust in intuition, like, what is my soul, you know? So mm-hmm. fear of, like, not wanting to, you know, do something or be in relationship with someone if I'm uncertain, because mm-hmm. I don't want to hurt them,
right?
You know, so I feel this pull to be loving and compassionate, and then this voice comes in that says right. that's afraid to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and it comes up with a really convincing reason that, like, hey, you know, you could right. you could hurt someone even by being loving and compassionate, right. if that
yeah.
makes sense.
Right. Okay. So this is the problem universally for every ego. It's not a single consciousness. It has fragments. And there is not only the part you identify with, but there are superego voices that will try to tell you you're wrong and be paranoid and be very afraid and right and you should or shouldn't do this and you should feel very bad about what you just did and,
yeah.
right, all of that, and that's what you must discern is always false.
Okay.
Any voice that arises within the complex of the ego, which is your sense of being a me, a person in the world with a body that does things, that's false.
Mm-hmm.
True discernment is when you realize there is no me, no my, no mine, no other, because there is no duality. And all of this is a single intelligence. Then you are discerning accurately. And you will receive wisdom not from voices in the mind, but directly from the silence, an intuitive knowing. And that's the Tao, that you'll receive a vibrational frequency that will guide you. And there will either be a resonance with someone because they're also in that state of discernment, and then you can have a real connection. Or else you're deluding yourself and they're deluding themselves and there are projections, and I'll accept your projections on me if you accept mine on you, and then games get played on an ego level that always turn out bad, right? So the discernment is any kind of a game being played by beings who are exchanging the currency of projections is not real and will only lead to more suffering because it will be exposed and turn into its opposite at some point, right? So the real discernment happens only in silence without desire, and there'll be no fear either. Okay.
Yeah. Do you mind if I summarize that out loud?
Sure.
So what I'm hearing basically is that it's the transition from listening to any of those voices, even if you've, you know, done, you know, years of healing and they're different and my voices are a lot more loving now, they're still voices,
mm-hmm.
and more to trusting, you know, an experience more so. I don't even know if you want to call it a feeling, but like you're saying, like the knowing, like knowing all, like I'm in the right place or, you know, looking someone in the eyes and feeling like, oh, this is a real connect, or not a real connection, but like that, you know, can't put words to it basically.
Exactly. It won't come in words. It won't be a narrative. As soon as it turns into a narrative, be suspicious.
Right. Like right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to understand what can't be understood, basically.
That's right. But if you're in the silence and there is acceptance, then you won't be pulled toward anything that won't be good for you or repelled by it. And things will flow as they are meant to, because everything unfolds from the will of God if you don't get in the way, right? And then it's all recognized as perfect. And if you're not in that flow, then something has to happen to awaken you to get back in the flow, and that's karma, right? So even if something negative happens, don't beat yourself up over it, because then you're even worse in the mud. Go just back into silence and acceptance, and everything will flow properly.
Yeah, it's almost like if something happens, I should be grateful for it because it's just pushing me back.
Even that is imaginary.
Okay.
Don't be grateful and don't be unhappy. Okay?
Yeah.
Because your love doesn't come out of any intention of an individual being, right? The bliss comes from that ultimate intelligence that is unfolding the whole play, not from the character within it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Got a question from Marnie. Has the mystery of which came first, the chicken or the egg, been solved yet?
It's been solved by God, who says both chickens and eggs happen simultaneously. And so there is no first moment in that sense. Because when the world appears, it appears as a finished ecosystem. Nothing really evolves from some primitive state or from some unfinished reality. In the same way that if you're watching a movie, you know, you see the entire scene as it is meant to unfold in medias res, as they say, in the middle of the action. Everything has always already unfolded to the point where that systemic succession of life and death is already in play, and it actually has no beginning in that linear sense. Okay. Is there anyone else who has a question? We have a few more minutes. Ah.
Very nice to meet you. I was wondering if you could speak to the apparent need for cultivation that I sometimes hear encouraged even from you, from other teachers, and the paradox of the ego wanting to attain something that it can't attain or that it already is.
Yes, the cultivation is simply abiding in what you already are and not running away from yourself. So it's a dropping of defenses against the real, because the ego is in a state of self-rejection and ignorance of its true nature. So the cultivation is really a dropping of ignorance. It's not an attainment of anything that isn't already yourself. But because your conscious mind doesn't know that and is living in a different vibrational frequency from that of bliss and liberation, there has to be an attunement to that level of your being that is usually suppressed or separated from, dissociated from by the ego complex. But everything is already there, and you are that now. But there does, most of the time, have to be some effort made to realize the truth of your being that shifts you out of the ego mode of processing experience.
Who is it that does the dropping, I guess, is a paradox that I get stuck in sometimes.
That's what we refer to as the soul level. The soul is the hinge between the transcendent self and the immanent ego that's moving in the world and that has the capacity to integrate those two levels. It's a vehicle that can separate the levels but also integrate them. And at a certain moment, the will of God, the grace, if you wish, comes that awakens the soul to its proper mode of being as a unifier of these two levels of reality into non-duality. So you don't do it as an ego. That's absolutely true. But if there is yearning within your consciousness to overcome the ego and realize the soul, that actually magnetizes the descent of grace, because the grace is coming from your real self. So to whatever part of your consciousness within the ego has a healthy relationship to the self will draw its presence into your actual consciousness.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
All right, thank you. It's a good question.
I have a sharing. Maybe a question will come. It's been an extraordinary evening, and I was just in speaking with Lakshmi actually just before this satsang, and we were discussing magic, how this is a magical place, and how to capture that. It was a photography meeting. How to capture that in an image. Mm. There are ways that you can, there are rainbows that seem magical, but you could see a rainbow pretty much anywhere in the world. There are beautiful images of nature or sunsets that are magical, but there's something special about coming to a class or other interactions that happen in this community that are magical and one happened tonight, and it was really exciting, and I just wanted to share it. And I feel like it happens. The magic happens in times where something stops you in your tracks. That's where I feel it. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's the micro moment of the absolute, mm-hmm. The naked presence. I think
right.
is the first
that's
one.
That's it.
And so, and all those things, a sunset, something that stops the ego for a moment, and wow, that's mm-hmm. that's that feeling of magic, because it seems unreal, mm-hmm. but it's actually more real than anything. Mm-hmm. And so there was just a beautiful synchronicity that happened tonight, and all these things are, I guess, synchronicities, that everything is, but that stopped me in my tracks. And in the middle of the teaching, you were... I had this urge come up, almost like you feel like you're about to sneeze, and you know it's coming, and you can't stop it. And it wasn't a sneezing urge. It was an urge that I was about to burst out and laugh. And there wasn't anything funny being said necessarily, and I wasn't thinking about anything. It just came. And I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna burst out and laugh. And then before I did, within a second, you said something along the lines of, you can't help but laugh at your ego because you know that's not you, mm-hmm. or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. So I took that as a very clear message, mm-hmm. And it was very grateful for that synchronicity to happen, and I was thinking more about it. I have to share this. What does this mean? So I'm thinking more about it, probably getting into my head too much. And I thought about what came to my mind was the ego, that we are this program, that it's just a program that can be deprogrammed, basically. It was the word program. The next thing you said was about the program. And it was just like, it was blowing my mind as if I needed another reminder that this is all magic. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to share that. It was a beautiful moment, and I appreciate those, you know, those gifts that come either in a dream that is just like, wow, how could you deny this magical reality? And then moments like this, and I hope every moment becomes a moment of awe like that. So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I hope you did let yourself laugh and continue to do that. You're absolutely right. In fact, in the Shaivite wisdom schools, they call this the moment of attainment of chamatkara, which means when your mind shifts from the seriousness of looking at situations from the apparatus of the ego to the state of wonderment in which you realize this is, in fact, all a miraculous display of God's magic, right? And then you stay in that state of wonderment, and then synchronicities happen in every moment. It's the wonderment that causes you to see the synchronicity and for it to appear, not that it appears first and then you wonder about it. So that is what happens when you are connected into the morphogenic field in which a single intelligence is saying and directing everything. And then indeed, what this character is saying and what that one is thinking are going to be simultaneously resonant, right? So it's a matter of being aware of that resonance and then seeing how it runs through the whole network of every being, because that connection moves everyone, whether they're aware of it or not. Okay, so thank you, Kalyan. Beautiful. Okay, so I hope that everyone got at least a good laugh out of the satsang, and perhaps a resonance with that source of wonderment that produces the miraculous and the beautiful and the ultimate reality of who we are. And that you can sustain the realization of that ultimate truth and bring that fully into your life as the avataric realization of your divine nature in the world, and complete the sacrifice of the illusory ego and the attainment of liberation here and now. Thank you all. Namaste. Namaste.